please give a very warm welcome to Maude Barrow.
All of you so much for being here tonight and for coming out in such numbers. When we claim that we care and that there is an alternative voice out there, it's really important that it's true. So I thank you from the bottom of my heart for the enthusiastic welcome, and just being here together just gives me enormous energy. People often say to me, where do you get all your, you know, your energy when you kind of get depressed about some of the things you talk about? And I say, well, I come out and give speeches to you and get you upset, and then I feel better. Which is not really untrue. That's actually kind of true. And I have to tell you, coming to St. John is coming home. My mother was raised here in Moncton. My dad was raised in Pointe aux Chines. I was born in Digby, Nova Scotia. My dad was the first town social worker. I spent all my summers in this area, so this really is coming home to me. I still feel away is away, and I'm still, my heart is still here, so I feel very close to Atlantic Canada, particularly New Brunswick. And when I come back here, I know in my heart and my roots and my family, who has been here for generations, well, my dad's family was the potato famine, so it really is generations, what the struggles have been here. When I look at this Atlantica, I see the struggles personified. But instead of this being done to New Brunswick and the Maritimes by Ottawa, it's done by some of our very own right here in our own community. So I just want to start off thinking, remembering that my father's father was a fisherman in Pointe aux Chines, and I come from a really deep and very humble and important, I think, humbly important roots of this community. This is a very important initiative, what we're doing here tonight. It's absolutely key that voices other than the elite voices of the big business community and their political friends are heard over this far-reaching and ambitious and, in my opinion, very dangerous project. But I want to talk for a few minutes about what's happening at the national level, because you need to know that Atlantica is one of a number of regional conferences like this, on projects like this, planned as part of a much bigger thing. And I want to talk for a couple of minutes about that bigger thing. It's called the Security and Prosperity Partnership for North America. You probably haven't read very much about it. Should have gone to Parliament, did not. What happened is that after 9/11, the big business community in this country, specifically and particularly the Canadian Council of Chief Executives, the same gang that brought us free trade, they used to be called the Business Council on National Issues. That's Tom DiPino, same group. 150 biggest corporations, many of them American branch plants operating here, decided that things were going to have to change. They realized that for the U.S., security now trumped trade. And if they wanted to keep that border open and keep what they believed were the fruits of NAFTA for them, they were going to have to offer up to the U.S. something very specific. And so they went back and they started working with the right-wing think tanks in this country and working with the politicians, and came up with a very strong and broad set of recommendations for what some of us are calling Fortress North America, a kind of European Union, but without any of the safeguards, environmental or social or equitable human rights kind of conditions that were originally built into the European Union. But they are talking about a very ambitious bloc, a North American bloc that would have a kind of, as one premier called it, a security ziploc around it. And it would be a bloc that would use Canada's resources, the United States power, military and corporate power, and of course the cheap migrant labor of Mexico, to become a bloc that will compete with China and of course will assert America's dominance in militarily around the world. And of course you should know, if this is something that does not, in my opinion, get the publicity it deserves, that the United States under George Bush is going into space. They are weaponizing space. As that Lance Lord, the head of the defense ministry, says, he says that space weaponization may not be their birthright, but it is their destiny. And they are going there. They have space military superiority, they want to keep it, and they have it, they're going to keep it. So we're talking here about merging into the bloc with an administration that is taking the world into military, potential military warfare from space. So this Canadian Council of Chief Executives called for a North American passport. North American point of entry, so that if somebody comes to visit you from somewhere and has no intention of going to the United States, they still have to prove to the U.S. authorities they're allowed into the block. Okay, and they're also talking about merged immigration and visa refugee policy, which is already taking place. They're talking about a security perimeter and mirroring in all three countries the security provisions of Homeland Security, and that is happening in this country and has already happened in many ways. They're talking about common defense, and I don't know if any of you saw the posters that were all around Washington a month ago showing Canadians in Afghanistan with their boots on supporting Iraq. Gee, I thought we all thought we were there as peacekeepers. It turns out maybe Mr. Harper's just a little bit more honest than Mr. Martin, but that we really are there just to support the Americans in Iraq. They're talking about an energy pact and a full resource pact, and some of them are openly talking about that, including water, by the way. They're talking about fully harmonized standards and regulations across the board, whether it's food, seeds, health and safety, environment. We have to not only go through what's called the smart regulation process, which means deregulation in every sector of our economy and our environment and our health and safety and food systems, but then we have set up cross-border committees and workforces and task forces to integrate our deregulated system with the U.S. system, so that if we change our minds and we get governments who feel that that's not been a good thing, to bring in what they call risk assessment instead of the precautionary principle, so that, of course, you'd have to count how many people you think might get ill or die before you take the product off the market, as opposed to saying you need to know it has to be safer. So these are the kind of changes that have happened in the U.S. that we're now entering into in Canada. If you want to change that, in the future you're going to have to somehow undo those agreements that we've made with this country to the south of us. So this is already happening in a very important and profound way at the national level. And I would be worried about this in any case because it's had no public scrutiny, no public debate. It has not gone to Parliament. It is far more far-reaching than NAFTA or anything we have done previous to NAFTA, but there has been no public debate. There have been no other groups, whether environmental or human rights or education or health or people concerned with children and social policy or any other aspect of Canadian life that's been involved. This has been between the big business community and the senior political level in Ottawa that this has taken place. So I would be worried enough about that, but I am deeply and doubly, triply worried that we have entered into this kind of Fortress North America arrangement with George Bush's administration, which I would argue is the most right-wing, anti-environmental, anti-human rights, anti-social rights, socially conservative, pro-military government in history. And this is a very, very serious problem for us. It should be the top debate that we're having in this country. Now, the Martin Liberals totally bought into this. In Waco, Texas, in March of 2005, Vincente Fox and George Bush and Paul Martin signed something called the Security and Prosperity Partnership for North America. You need to know more about this because that's what Atlantica is based on. And they agreed and came back and implemented this so-called smart regulation process where we have now agreed to harmonize across the board, whether it's environment or health and safety or the military or security. We are harmonizing our process in a very systemic way. But it intensified under Stephen Harper, who was clearly philosophically and politically very closely aligned to George Bush and feels very comfortable with the direction in which that country is going. So this past March, just 2 months ago, in Cancun, Mexico, thank you, they deepened their commitment, and this time they brought Tom DeKino from our country, the head of the Canadian Council of Chief Executives, four other senior CEOs, and each other country brought five people, and these 15 senior business leaders of the continent set up a competitiveness Council of North America. And they are now going to co-govern with the governments of the three countries this whole new project called Fortress North America. And again, not one other sector was invited or participated in this negotiation. So as I say, it's gone way beyond NAFTA and yet has not gone to Parliament. And the communication strategy, very clear, it's not subtle, coming out was stated by the Harper government and the three governments coming out of the Cancun summit a few months ago was the following. They're going to have continued meetings with the business community. They're going to have round tables with other stakeholders, and they're going to have briefings with parliamentarians. Now, what this says to me is that this is the new form of governance in Canada. This is governance by elite. This is governance by those who have not been elected but have become so powerful that they dictate policy, and in such a way that we're not even taking it to parliaments or our provincial legislatures anymore to debate. So the whole project is the brainchild of the big business community, and as I say, no other voices have been included. This is the mirror of what's happening here in Atlantic Canada with Atlantica. This is starting with the big business community. No, at this moment, there are no senior politicians from the two countries or any of the provinces or states slated to be there, but that's how it happened at the national level. It was decided within the big business community first, and then it moved on and was handed as a kind of blueprint to the politicians who bought it hook, line, and sinker, and then was sold to the Canadian people as just one more kind of small agreement and nothing too significant. Atlantic Canada is this region's part of this cross-border project, and there are going to be several others of these across the country, driven by the Privy Council, which has been tasked with bringing this deep harmonization, this deep integration to subnational governments across the country. And it, of course, like at the national level, has excluded all other voices but the voices of its own. And of course, the amount of money that's being asked to go to that conference in itself, even if people were welcome, keeps most of us out in any case. But what do we know about Atlantica? Well, all of us will speak to that, and I know people in this room will speak to it very passionately as well, but I just want to say the following things and then stop so my colleagues can speak. The first thing that reaching Atlantica is not an inclusive conference. This is governance by elite, and this is a very, very bad sign. It needs to be challenged at the fundamental area of democracy. This is an anti-democratic process in every way. Reaching Atlantica is driven by corporate interests. The conference sponsors include giant corporations. You probably know them. This is the way of the world now. Every time I go to a conference, it's supposed to be about governments, or governance is brought to you by corporations. I just got back from Mexico City for the Fourth World Water Forum, supposedly put on by governments, totally sponsored by the big water companies like Suez and the big bottled water companies like Coca-Cola. Memories of being at the World Summit on Sustainable Development in South Africa a few years ago, where all the governments of the world came together 10 years after Rio to see how we were doing. And the first thing I saw when I got off the plane was a great big De Beers ad on a huge billboard. But instead of a diamond that said diamonds are forever, it was a teardrop or a raindrop that said water is forever, brought to you by De Beers. And at this conference, the big water companies actually sat as voting delegates with the governments, the government delegations. And again, not one other sector had this power. Reaching Atlantica threatens the ability of governments to effectively represent their citizens, because this is being done outside of the democratic process, and it is extremely important that we challenge the way that this is happening. Its identified goal is attached attending the yearly New England Governors and Eastern Canadian Premiers Conference. So already they have identified that after they get their act together and they have come up with their projects and recommendations, they are going to start influencing government, not coming to the people, not taking this message to the rest of us. Reaching Atlantica promotes economic integration with the United States, and again, I don't think there's anyone in this room or anyone in New England that doesn't want closer ties, cultural ties, environmental ties, ties of people to people, teaching each other how to live in this wonderful part of the world sustainably, in relation to nature, respectfully with one another. That's not the model that they have here. They're talking about integration with George Bush's America. And we all know what happens when $1 trillion, and that's what they'll spend this year, $1 trillion US, between their military and their war on terror, we know what happens to infrastructure and ordinary people and social programs when that kind of money is spent there. We saw it in New Orleans when people were left behind just to fend for themselves when nature assaulted New Orleans. In my research for my book on deep integration, I found that in the last, since 2000, when George Bush first came to power, they've cut welfare by 13% every year. And can you imagine what it's like living anywhere in the bottom half of America? In fact, under George Bush, the United States has just surpassed every other part of the world in having the greatest income inequality and class inequality in the world. It's even deeper and more pronounced than it is in Latin America. This is the America of a small elite, and this is governance by elite, and this is the model for Atlantica. Reaching Atlantica promotes political integration with the United States, political integration along the lines of this race to the bottom, the lowest common denominator. What's good for big business somehow will be good for the rest of us. Well, you've heard that before, and we know it's not true. We're not going to buy it this time. Reaching Atlantica threatens the rights of workers. We know that, and other people are going to speak to it, but it is terribly important that we name that this is an assault on working people and on their unionized rights. They cannot have the world they want in which everybody's a winner. They have to create a world of winners and losers, and that this is a clear and not very subtle attempt to identify who those losers are going to be under the language of all of us being winners. And Atlantica, reaching Atlantica, it will be terrible for the environment. They're talking about this massive superhighway coming through this region. Let me tell you, it'll be a superhighway to further take away the resources and the brightest young people in our region. And if you want to see what a super NAFTA highway looks like, go stay in a motel on the strip in Windsor, Ontario, as the Windsor Detroit strip, as the cars go by, 16 at a time. The cars and trucks go by 16 at a time, 24/7. It is a recipe for environmental disaster. It is not about building sustainable communities. It's not about the people in Atlantica. It is about taking what's best from Atlantica. And frankly, it's a kind of theft of the brilliance, the creativity, the diversity that is this community and is this community's future. I started talking about my parents, and I just want to end by telling you that my own dad, who died a few years ago of Parkinson's, my dad was in the war and was actually hit in the head by a bullet that never exited. My mom used to say that explained a lot. But actually how they met was very sweet. My mom was married to a boy who grew up near her. She didn't know my dad very well as a kid. And that young man went off to war when they were just 6 weeks married. They were 20 and 21. And he said to her at the airport, "I won't be back. So have a wonderful life. I won't be back," because all those first boys were killed. And he, in fact, was. What my mom, they didn't know when she saw him off at the airport was that she was pregnant with my older sister. So when she discovered that, she moved back into her parents' community. This was a small community outside of Moncton, and spent the war there. And then when my dad came home, was hit in the head with his bullet, and then the war ended, that's how they met. And one day he was coming up my mother's steps. My grandmother, who was terribly Scottish, had a very deep Scottish brogue, said, "Well, now here comes Billy McGrath." And my mom said, "Now you sent him next door. He's got a date with Mary. He's had a date with the girl next door. But I guess he looked gorgeous in his uniform and so on." So my grandmother said, now you behave yourself, Flossie. She said, "Billy McGrath's coming up these steps. He's coming in the house. You're going to marry him." She said, "If you can't do it, get in the kitchen. I'll look after him." So that's a true story. My mother went back in the kitchen, and my sister, who was just about to turn four, remembers seeing our dad for the first time, peeking out behind my mother's skirts. And my dad knocked on the door, and he said, "Do I have the right address?" And my grandmother said, "You sure do, Billy McGrath. You get in here." And they were married 3 months later because nobody said no to my grandma, right? But I tell you this because my dad and mom were part of that phenomenal generation that decided that they were going to stand for something, that they had given up so much. My dad was wounded. In fact, I've read recently that Parkinson's, for many people who die of Parkinson's or have Parkinson's, there was a head trauma. And so I think of my dad as being a kind of World War II casualty a number of years later. But my mom lost her husband, and my sister lost her father. My dad lost his very best friend sitting behind him beside him in a trench. And I mean, that whole generation saw such terrible things. And when they came back, my dad said they decided that they had to make something of their lives, that they would build what he called a social nation state, in which the economy and trade and business serves people and communities. And that the same government that couldn't feed, house, clothe, or employ anybody before the war and suddenly had enough money to do all of that during the war would not be allowed to say, well, suddenly we have other interests and we have other priorities and we can't do that anymore. And they said about building those ribbons of interdependence, which were the great social programs of our time, every single one of which has been either killed or is under assault under this new marvelous neoliberal market-based miracle that we're all supposed to buy into, except it doesn't work for any but the elite of our country, of our provinces, and of our world. So my dad, if he were standing here to you tonight, would say, and I know he'd say this because he said it to me just before he died, this is your generation's version of the war that I fought. This is about human dignity. This is about fundamental rights that were fought by other generations. People have lived and died to give us these rights, and it is not going to be handed away to a bunch of people in suits eating dinners that are more than most people's weekly pay, so that they can see the fruits of a kind of vision that's an exclusionary vision only for themselves. And we have to tell our politicians these people did not elect them, and that they speak to us and for us, and we will not rest, and democracy will prevail. We and our vision of what this community can look like, what an Atlantica based on something phenomenally different would look like. This is not a Canada versus US or the Maritimes, Atlantic Canada versus New England. That's not at all what this is about. This is about people joining hands across the border with a different vision for what our communities should and must look like. This is not sustainable. What they have in mind, like what they are doing to the world, is not sustainable. Unlimited growth upon which this is based has the same DNA as a cancer cell. It has to churn on its host in order to survive. It's not sustainable. We have to say no to this. And it's a huge challenge, and it's going to take a lot of work, and it's going to take a lot of cooperation. We should have some fun while we're doing it, and we better get this right, because we really, when you say it may take the rest of our lives to do this, what else have we got to do? Thank you very much.